there. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. You know what else is online? Lots of interesting stuff. Distractions, you could call them even. You know, when your Aunt Catherine forwards you some random article in the middle of the day, and ordinarily you would just dismiss Aunt Catherine's email, but you look at it because you're at work and you want a distraction, and then you forward it to someone else and someone else and someone else and all that stuff. Emails from Aunt Catherine, other interesting things you find on the internet. We put it together, we put it in a package, and we call it The Most. Mike Pesca.
I will start off with the most viewed article on AuntCatherine.com. Actually, no, it is the most viewed article on The Washington Post. Did Rush Limbaugh tilt results in Indiana? I don't know. That's why I'm asking you, Washington Post. Well, Mr. Senior Limbo, the most listened to radio show in America, number 2's Morning Edition, had this campaign, and he called it Operation Chaos. And the idea was, let's send everyone to the polls in Indiana where they had an open primary and vote for Hillary Clinton. And the idea was you'd prolong the Democratic race and bloody up the Democratic candidates. At least this is what Limbo was telling his minions, who are known as the Ditto Heads. Well, I guess enough Ditto Heads did it to raise the question. Some Obama supporters are saying, for instance, that perhaps we would have won Indiana were it not for Limbaugh. Well, who really knows, except you have to love the crazy radio stunt being the number one story in the Washington Post. I think in a way it's good for our industry. Maybe not. Ian, what do you have?
I have a most popular from my hometown paper in West Virginia, the Charleston Daily Mail. You know, the primary there is coming up. And
yeah.
Local
columnist.
I hope
you're going to get us some inside scoop on that one.
Yeah, well, here's a little bit of it. This is Don Serber. He's a columnist there. He has some advice.
Is he the dean of West Virginia political columnists?
That's a really tight race, yeah. Actually, for the dean of West Virginia politics.
Does he have tenure?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's the thing, is nobody really leaves, so yeah. Everybody's got tenure in West Virginia. Anyway, he has a few pieces of advice for the candidates vying for the nomination. First is pronunciation advice. We talked about hurricane the other day, which is actually pronounced hurricane.
Hurricane West
Virginia. Another thing, Fayetteville is in North Carolina. Fayetteville spelled the same in West Virginia. Fayetteville.
Gotta get that stuff right.
The Big River, the spelled Kanawha. Kanawha. Okay, and
everything you just kind of push together.
Just mumble. Yeah. Mumble. You can't go wrong in West Virginia.
Well, you know, you want to save time. Eliminate a syllable.
Syllables.
We move fast in West
They're
Virginia.
This must be the most efficient state in the union.
Yeah. You look at the stats.
It's an industry
when I
leader.
I think West Virginia, I think fast people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fast.
All right, come on. Come on, people.
Sorry.
The you know, your candidates, they want to, when they go to Philly, they want to eat cheesesteaks, you know, represent with some of the local cuisine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do not do that in West Virginia. Do not eat ramps. Are you familiar with ramps?
No.
So aren't they like, I don't know, a vegetable? Celery?
Yeah, it's kind of
highfalutin
celery. No, it's kind of in the onion family.
Yeah.
I've
What'll
had
happen
them.
To you?
Like, oh, you will stink for a day. They're like, it's like an onion times garlic times hate. They're nasty. Ride an ATV, okay?
You do need to do that one.
That's
a must do.
Do that. To Barack Obama, do not complain about growing up in Hawaii. But then he takes it kind of serious at the end. You know, don't try to be one of us. You know, the one time, we don't really want one of us. The one time a West Virginian was nominated for president, Democrat John Davis in 1920, he failed to carry West Virginia. So just be yourself, everybody.
Oh, it's a good lesson.
And don't eat ramps.
Be yourself and don't eat ramps. Jeannie, what do you have?
All right, this was most emailed on Yahoo. Okay, guys, there are two kinds of fat. All right, there's visceral fat. That's what you carry around on your abdomen. And I guess scientists have known for a long time that people with a lot of this ab, you know, fat belly fat.
Beer belly.
You have a higher risk of diabetes and heart disease. But now they have found out that subcutaneous fat, which is the kind on your hips and your rear end.
Feminine fat,
mm-hmm.
It's called.
Actually has sort of a health effect on these very same disorders. And they figured this out by taking subcutaneous fat and putting it on the abdomen of little mice. And they started to slim down, and they started to have better blood sugar levels.
Even with extra fat on their tummies?
They put it on their tummy.
They actually rubbed fat on these mice?
Think needles.
They injected cellulose.
Yeah, they put it right into their belly, and their blood sugar levels stabilized, and their insulin levels started to have a better regulation of insulin levels. So they're saying this is theirs, good fat and bad fat, and some new reasons to respect that big rear end, which is something that I guess Spinal Tap has appreciated all along.
I believe history reflects that.
That's a classic.
They knew it all along.
The subtle intonations of Nigel Tufnell and company. Dan Pashman, what do you have?
That's right. I got to go back there. Jeannie talked about two kinds of fat. She left out bacon fat. That's another important kind of fat.
It's its own kind.
Yes. It has a lot of
powerful injecting that into mice.
Properties that I like to explore. We got a most email here from New York Times science section. Platypus looks strange on the inside, too. We all know duck-bill platypus. It has a bill and webbed feet like a duck. It lays eggs like a bird or a reptile. It produces milk and has a coat of fur like a mammal. So it's
crazy.
Sort of this bizarre vortex of different types of animals all come together in one, and scientists have decoded its genome to learn more about it. And the idea is, by learning about the genetic makeup of the platypus, that they can sort of learn about the order that other animals and species, including humans, evolved in. And the most interesting fact I found from this article, the platypus shares 82% of its genes with the human, the mouse, the dog, the opossum, and the chicken. So we are, does that mean that we're 82% platypus?
The duck-billed among us are, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I believe, Dan, you come to us with an update on another story.
An update on a story we did the other day about these sea lions that were shot dead in the Columbia River right along the border of Washington State and Oregon.
Yes.
Well, we thought that they were shot dead. That was the story we were discussing. Well, it turns out it's now looking like they weren't shot.
And
it's now a mystery. Well, everyone was wrong. The story was reported that they had been shot, and it now looks like they were not shot. Six of them, endangered sea lions, were killed. They were lying in open traps. The traps were closed. We don't know who closed the traps. We don't know yet how they died. They did find some metal fragments in a couple of the animals. They did find a slug in one of the other ones, but none of those appear to have been the cause of death and could have been old injuries.
Interesting. Yeah. So who knows where that happened or why that happened? Fisheries are on it. And Matt, what do you have?
I have one of the most emailed at npr.org right now. We're also doing most viewed at npr.org now, which we didn't do before. It's very exciting for me.
We got both?
We have both.
All right.
That's fantastic. Anyway, one of the most emailed... I'm the only person who gets excited about this.
Simple minds of simple pleasures.
One of the most emailed stories at npr.org is by reporter Vicky Barker. Very, very. We like the big Vicky Barker. It's a profile of the highest concentration of lesbians in Britain. And it's in a small former mill town deep in rural Yorkshire. And here's Vicky Barker.
Late night at the Trades Club in Hebden Bridge. Local group Rakish Paddy has feet stomping in the darkened room. Look closely, and you'll see some of the couples here are single sex. They are the tip of a demographic iceberg, because it is this former mill town nestled among the Yorkshire moors which has, statistics show, the greatest density of lesbians in all of Great Britain. About one out of every five adults walking the steep and winding streets outside is a gay woman. With its jumbly slate-roofed houses jammed into a long, narrow river valley, Hebden Bridge could be practically any Yorkshire town. If you're familiar with the BBC series Last of the Summer Wine, you'd definitely recognize the scenery, but maybe not some of the local inhabitants.
I'm Karen, and this is our baby Florence. It's my partner Fiona, and our eldest daughter Lily.
Karen Taylor and her partner, Fiona Winder, treat their children to an early dinner at a local bistro. They moved here 18 months ago. Like so many of the gay women here, they wanted to raise a family in a place where a family like theirs is not unusual.
Yeah, it's been great. We've met lots of other lesbian mothers and lots of other straight mothers as well, which are really cool. And it's just basically not a big deal. We don't get so much... Oh, right, when we explain that the girls have got two mummies, it makes such a difference to us.
Houseboats line the Rochdale Canal, which zigzags through the town. The old mills and warehouses are mostly condos now, but the locks are still operated by hand. On the moors, high above, you can walk some of the ancient pathways which crisscross the Pennines and the Yorkshire Dales. But more than the beauty, it is the tolerance of the locals that has drawn the lesbians. If there are people here who object to that lifestyle, they're keeping it to themselves. But then, the gay women are just following in the footsteps of hippies who settled here after the mills closed down in the 1960s. Hebden Bridge has had plenty of time to get used to alternative lifestyles. At the ladies and gents hairdressers on Market Street on a weekday afternoon, most of the hair they sweep up is gray.
You get some nice people when they're gay.
Longtime customer Rita Baxter.
I know we've got quite a few gay women around. But they don't bother me because, you know, they keep themselves to themselves, don't they?
Why do you think these gay women
have... They can't find the right fella.
Nikki Simmons, standing among the other mothers as the local primary school gets out, agrees the lesbian influx is no big deal.
My kids know who's got two mums and it's just par for the course, really. Holly definitely will say, you know, she's going to marry her friend Romy and she'll add at the end of it, because girls can marry girls, mum. And I'll say, yes, dear, I know.
The present generation of lesbians in Hebden Bridge seem to think that they've invented something new.
David Fletcher, a 75-year-old academic, grew up in Hebden Bridge. He says women in these parts have gone their own way ever since the Industrial Revolution. That's when many men, all handloom weavers, lost their livelihood, and the women became the breadwinners, working in the new textile factories.
The women in this part of the world, from about 1820, 1830 onwards, had this independent economic power, which gave them independence in many other ways. Even when I went to school here, it wasn't unusual to find a family of, say, five children that had different surnames because they'd been fathered by different... And it wasn't a problem.
Another long-accepted practice, says David Fletcher, women choosing to live with other women.
Economically, it's a lot cheaper if two people live in the same house and share the same bills. And if they're fond of each other, well, you know, they get their satisfactions in other ways, perhaps.
Some in Hebden Bridge worry that property prices are starting to creep beyond the reach of the town's original inhabitants. But just as many people will tell you, the women have bolstered the local economy. And their children, filling the local schools, have given this once dying mill town a future. For NPR News, I'm Vicki Barker in Hebden Bridge, England.
You can get links to this and all the stories you heard on the most by going to our website, npr.org.